So thank you everyone for joining us. Today we have Philip, CEO and founder of Vectioneer. Thank you for coming with us.
Thank you for having me.
So can you tell us a little bit of where do you come from? Who are you? What's your background?
Yeah, so I'm Philip Piatkiewicz. I have a background in mechanical engineering, which I studied in Delft in the Netherlands, and a specialty of systems and control. And this kind of is the red thread through my life. I stuck to this subject. And when I left the university, I worked for a company called Hydrodyne in the Netherlands, and they were doing great projects, like offshore projects, big constructions, everything that a young engineer would love to do. And this company was then taken over by Bosch. So we were part of the Bosch group. But this work, was so inspiring that I wanted to do this the rest of my life, but maybe not with Bosch. So after 12 years, I left. And then I started my own company, Vectioneer, first as a consultancy firm. And then later we developed the product that we needed for our own projects. But always systems engineering is the thing we were wanting to do. With my colleagues, so also former colleagues, they also joined the company and they had a holistic look at technology. So they were multi-interested people like myself. I can hardly keep my attention on one thing. This is also a problem. And the draw always learn something new. Never do the same thing, read more books, gaining more knowledge. And this is, I think, what binds our people inside our company, that they're really curious about new technology.
So you started Vectioneer. What was the big challenge or the big problem that you found out that needed someone to solve it?
Yeah, so we started as a systems and engineering company that did consultancy for different projects, like offshore projects or robotics. But the main thing that we always needed, so we did the whole design of a machine, where we designed how the machine would look, how the command would work, and also how the drive and control system would work. And the latter, this control system, was also something that is central in a problem. So when you're building a machine, the control system and let's say the software is getting more and more attention because the hardware is becoming more and more a commodity. So the problem we figured out is that when we started Vectioneer, we were just with two people and we got this big customer. Lufthansa was our first customer, actually. So they trusted us with our knowledge and they said we need some new control systems for our flight simulators. We chose a product from a renowned German automation company because we thought this was the most advanced that we could buy. We wanted to program in C++ because this is also what we did in my previous career, which would give us much more freedom to do whatever we wanted. So this was already a complex system with many different controllers. So four control systems in one network, and they had to work together. But we were rather disappointed by the performance of the system that we bought. So it was always limiting, either in performance or in possibilities or in the ways you could interface with it. So we really discovered that in the industrial world, there was not a great solution that we were expecting to find. What we expected was, let's say, my son, who was 3 years or 4 years old at the time, he was already discovering games on the internet where, nowadays you have games like Fortnite, where you are with 100 people in the same simulation environment and everything works effortlessly and with really low latency, so really nice reaction times. And this was not possible in the industrial world with the compute systems that we could buy. So that was our problem, the lack of freedom and the feeling that you're being limited in what you wanted to do. And I wanted to be unlimited because I had this interest in, I want to solve these problems and I want to make cool user interfaces and not these ugly PLC-like interfaces. So we decided at that point this was the first and last project that we did with this commercial system. And then we decided, okay, we're building our own. So we will combine IT technology and put it in this OT world at the time, which is very conservative and still is very conservative.
So you explained about the problem, the challenge that you found, but why did you want it to solve this problem? What was your vision?
The vision is,
what is driving Vectioneer to do what you do?
Vectioneer is about the human aspect of the dry technology. So our motto was always a human-centered engineering, and we wanted to be able to create systems that were more usable, more user-friendly, give you the right information, and also take away your tedious tasks. So we wanted to automate much more than just make a motor spin. We wanted to buy software as a commodity and use it in our projects. But because of the limitations of the current systems, we couldn't accomplish our vision. And this is why we started ourselves with developing what's now called Motor Cortex, which kind of gave you the freedom to do whatever you wanted. And we saw that this was necessary for the world because systems get more and more complex. So you want more features. You have robots that need eyes. They want vision systems. They have navigation systems. They want to do mapping. So there's more and more complexity going on, and you have to have a system that allows you to think in possibilities instead of working around of an existing system.
So can you explain us clearly what is the Vectioneer solution? How does it work?
The Vectioneer solution is, I think it's the combination of the systems engineering thinking, of taking a holistic approach, instead of just looking at the software problem, like how do we write software that accomplishes some task, but really thinking of what is the goal for the customer of this machine. What does he want to achieve? How should it work? Motor Cortex is an embedded motion control system. So we provide a hard real-time system based on Linux, so that gives you a lot of freedom to put other things on top of this platform. It's a very fast middleware, so you can communicate to other systems very efficiently. And this middleware also has an open source API. We thought this is really important because we want to be an enabler. We don't want to restrict people on what they can do with the system. Anybody should be able to connect also without cost to the system to come up with new ideas and to do something with the data that flows in our control system. And then the other thing is that we wanted to use the browser as a main interface. So we chose this middleware to communicate directly to the browser without any plugins. We think the browser is made for user interfaces. There's also a lot of people around that know how to make beautiful user interfaces in the browser. So why would you pick some other system that it's very difficult to find people in that know how to do this? So the browser was also a very important part. And also, yeah, everything is moving into the browser nowadays. So you have word processors and everything in the browser. So this makes it also very user-friendly because people are already used to this. Maybe not in the industrial world yet, but this will come.
So what are the main benefits of using Motor Cortex?
The benefits of Motor Cortex are the freedom that you have. So you have an open system that's truly open with an open API so that anyone can connect. And it is high performance. So it also did away with all the hardware dependency that other systems have, because when you now buy a motion control system, you're always bound to some vendor's hardware, because these vendors, first of all, they try to sell you their hardware. And then on top of that, they have some software platform that works on their hardware and sometimes only on their hardware. And we wanted to get rid of this. So our vision is really that hardware should be a commodity as much as possible. We saw this in Corona crisis, when hardware was very scarce, a lot of factories shut down and computers were not available. So you could buy what you could find. But if you in your factory needed a certain kind of PLC, then you were really stuck. Because if this PLC broke down in this Corona time, then you had a problem because there was more than 2 years delivery times. So this is also a big problem, and it will not go away. It didn't go away after Corona. So we decided to become a software-only solution that is hardware independent as much as possible, so that it would allow our customers to buy any PC or I/O card from any vendor and just stick it together, and the software should solve this problem and it should work with any piece of hardware. So that you can pick the parts that you can buy and put them on the shelf instead of exactly this right one. Also, there is this trend of that if you really want to do this, then you have to make the hardware a commodity, but also the hardware functions that are inside this hardware you shouldn't use. And that a lot of these hardware vendors, they try to put more intelligence into their sensors, into their motors. And this is all proprietary stuff. And then this makes that if you use this function of this particular motor, you cannot replace this motor with another brand because it doesn't have this feature, or the feature is a little bit different. So they do this on purpose, I think, which is their good right, because they also are in the money-making business, just like we are. But yeah, since we're a software company, we want to this problem and pull all these functions up to the software level. So the higher level software. So not the software on the device itself, but to a higher level. So that these hardware really becomes a commodity and you can exchange it.
Okay. What types of applications are most commonly solved with Motor Cortex?
Oh, we have a very wide range of applications. This ranges from large offshore systems to toys, toy robots, to robots, to robot arm welding robots, even to medical robots like surgical robots, and even flying robots. So we recently had a project where we put Motor Cortex as a flight control system of a manned aircraft. So it's very wide range. And yeah, this also underlines our motto, think possible. So you should not be limited by your imagination of what you can do with it. And the system should allow you to come up with new ways of how to use it.
What is the best scenario, or let me rephrase it, when is the ideal case on when someone should choose Motor Cortex?
Yeah, so our happiest customers are basically the ones that trust you. They need to trust you with a very important part of their business, of course, because they are developing a machine and they need to make so many choices about hardware, about electronics. So hardware meaning mechanical parts and also software. And we see that a lot of companies, if they would have to build their own software, they would have to hire quite a few disciplines. Within the software realm, you have to maintain the operating system. If you want to do Linux-based, for instance, you have to maintain your functionality blocks, and then you have to maintain your applications. So there's a lot of things involved, and it requires a lot of specialist people. So this customer that gives us this trust knows that he's in good hands, and we will take care of his project, but not only by providing him with the best software possible, but also by providing him this system engineering approach. So we think with him about, is this the right motor or gearbox combination that he can buy? Or he's having some EMC issues. They all have EMC issues, by the way. And from working as a consultant with other customers, we can help this customer more than just providing him the software. And I think this is a very important thing, is that because this knowledge is so scarce, companies don't have these kind of teams. Also, they don't have a lot of systems people. Usually they have discipline people, but not systems people. So we can combine this consultancy of helping them with the design of their whole solution, as well as with then putting everything together in a piece of software.
Okay, let me ask it from the other point of view, from the other side. Why you should not choose Motor Cortex? Or who should not choose Motor Cortex?
Yeah, everybody's free to do whatever he wants. So I think we should just try to be better than the competition. But we see that there's a lot of conservative thinking, or some would bluntly call it the shit of yesterday. So they haven't made a choice 10 or 20, maybe 20 years ago, and they're still stuck in this system because they are, yeah, their whole factory, their whole product range is equipped with a certain piece of hardware software combination. So they cannot really get out anymore. So it's quite a step to go from, for instance, from a PLC control system to an embedded system. These are completely different worlds. So this step is quite large. And if somebody's happy with a PLC, should stick to that. So we're not a solution for everything. The market is so big, since we can be in toys up to offshore constructions, off to flight simulators, airplanes or cars or even medical systems. So our market is big enough that we wouldn't worry about. We don't want to get everybody's attention, just some of them.
So you just mentioned, a lot of applications today historically have been solved with why to choose embedded against PLCs.
Yeah, this is a general trend that is happening, and I think it's unstoppable that PLCs are being slowly replaced by embedded solutions. And the reason is because the world is becoming more and more complex, so we have higher and higher expectations of our machines, not in terms of functionality, but also on how safety will work. So there's many more rules and regulations. Yeah, consider that in the 1950s, you would construct the bonnet of a car. So it would just be a piece of metal. But nowadays, it has to comply to so many rules about aerodynamics, about that there's no pollutants in the paint. It has to be scratch resistant and it has to last. So there's so many properties that are added to very simple products. And this is going on, and we cannot stop this. And the same is happening for software. So we have security, so cybersecurity. We have safety. We have to other systems. We want to get access to the data, but not everybody. So there should be user management. We want to have responsive user interfaces and so on. Yeah, all these things can, they ask for embedded solution where you are more free to choose, okay, I want a component like this from this vendor and I want a component like this from that vendor and I have to tie this all together. And this does not work very well on the PLC platform, which by itself is hardware limited a lot of the time. there's a trend now to move PLC software to a PC platform, but that's not really the solution because PLCs use obscure programming languages. These are the languages that our kids don't get to learn in school. They learn Python, JavaScript, Java, maybe C in school, and they don't learn structured text. This is really, it's not even in the top 100 of languages. This is all being replaced by modern languages like IT way of thinking will be entering OT at some point. So this is why we think that embedded is the way to go, because you have more flexibility in terms of choosing which hardware you run on and which other software you want to connect to.
How is Motor Cortex or your solution different from other solutions?
Yeah, we have a particular focus on the edge between hardware and the software layer. So if you look at decision-making processes, which is basically what software does, you have different levels. So you have this planning and reasoning part, which takes time. So maybe you have to think about a problem for an hour, or maybe a couple of days before you make a plan of what you're going to do. And if you automate, this may happen in, let's say, 10 seconds or maybe an hour or maybe a second if you're really quick. Then there's the second level is procedural execution. So where you already thought about the plan and you wrote down this plan in the procedure and you execute this. This is how a logic process works. I press the button, the light goes on. This is a procedure. And then you have an even lower level, which is the skill level. So this is how we operate on the millisecond or maybe sub-millisecond time scale. And this is where motor cortex is. So this is also why the name is motor cortex, because the motor cortex is a part of the brain that operates your hand and your motion, also your speech, how you move your lips and tighten your vocal cord. You have to think about it, it just happens. So it's like muscle memory. And this is the perfect analogy for our system. We want to be the thing that you don't see. So this is also difficult in selling this product because you don't see it. If you see it, there's something wrong. If you cannot walk properly, then you notice that your motor cortex is not working. But as soon as everything works, you don't. Nobody thinks about the motor cortex. We try to be the interface between, let's say, the currents and voltages that go to the motors and the layer above, which is then this higher level decision making, let's call that the neocortex, where there is vision and there's more kind of path planning or navigation systems. So we interface between hardware and these higher level systems. And we try to stay there as much as possible. This is our expertise.
Okay. But let me go back to the question then. How do you position yourself compared to your competitors in the space or alternative solutions?
So we are a pure embedded solution. So we think that we're ahead of the trend. This trend is still going on, especially in the industrial world. And we try to stay ahead of this. And the way we distinguish ourselves is that we focus on this lower level. So the edge between hardware and software. And there's not many other companies that do this. So there's a lot of startups. Also, when we started 10 years ago, most robotic startups were on the higher level. So we're on the decision-making, planning level.
Sexy part.
Yeah, that's the sexy part, vision. But they also assumed that this lower level part was covered. It was a commodity. But we discovered that it was not a commodity. There were so many limitations that when you use a PLC and you have to interface your super duper vision application with a PLC, then this has some problems. So there's proprietary APIs, slow update rates, at latencies. So all of these problems. And then you have to work around this, or you decide like we did, scratch this. We're going to make something new that is using IT technology, the gaming feel we want to put in motion control so that you really feel connected with your system. And this is also coming back then to this human-centered approach where you have a feeling with a machine, so because it's responsive. And you don't have to wait, and it feels like an automaton, but it's like it comes alive, basically.
Who do you see as a biggest competitor in terms of solution? It's the teams developing their machine with PLCs, or the teams trying to build their own whole software with TwinCat, for example? And who gets the biggest benefit on using your solution from those two?
Yeah, so first of all, we are hardware independent. When you look at Twin as a competitor, which is a competitor, but they are backed by a company that wants to sell you their hardware. Our software only, so we are very different, and we're also more embedded than TwinCat at this moment. I think we're one step ahead in this way of how this works. It not only happens in the embedded part, but also in how do you deploy software, for instance, to your robots. There we use internet technology, so we have an online platform. You don't need to install any software on your laptop to be able to deploy software or to look at data of a software. So this is another aspect where we are different from the competition. We don't have a Windows-only installer. We have a web browser, and anybody has a web browser, even on your phone. And from there, you could deploy software to your machines securely, and also change configurations and backup configurations. This was about distinguishing ourselves, right?
Yeah, we discussed about the guys developing their own with TwinCat, and also about the PLCs.
Yeah, so PLCs still have their purpose because they are, in general, programmed by people that are not programmers. PLCs are made for electrical engineers that use their knowledge about how you connect wires together. So for a lot of simple tasks, this is fine. We set us apart by being an embedded solution that is more like firmware on your coffee maker, where we also see that with the existing PLC users, they expect that they need to change the software while the system is already operational. And I think in general, this is a very bad idea. The reason they have to do this online change is that they don't have the right debug tools to figure out problems as they happen. So let's say a machine has been built and delivered by some company to a factory, and they are using this machine. This machine has been tested, and it is proven that it works. And 2 months later, the products coming out of these machines have a defect. And so in the current situation where you have this PLC, the client calls his engineer and says, you have to debug this problem. He says, okay, I need to get more data. So he enters the code. He adds a variable to look at some data, and it tries to make a recording of some particular data. And this is why they need access to the PLC code, they think. But actually, if you have an embedded system that is also, it's tested, it's considered to be good, it's been delivered. If then some problem happens in the field, the system should already have the way of looking at all the data. So this is also what we build into Motor Cortex, is that you're able to look at any data that you want. And you don't have to recompile, you don't have to change the code at any time. You can just take your web browser, look at the signal that you want to see, and thereby finding your cause of your problems.
Okay. My question is now, what are the biggest obstacles to the adoption of the Motor Cortex solution, and how do you overcome them?
Yeah, our biggest obstacle at the moment is maybe that we're a little bit ahead of the curve. Yeah, if I'm looking at the industrial market, there everybody's still used to using PLCs. There's also very big dominant players in this field. And we are just new, we're only 10 years old, but consider ourselves still very young compared to these companies. So it's very difficult to convince people that we're worth looking at, and also to convince them of the benefits, because there's a lot of conservatism. It's like, we've always worked like this, and our machines are fine, and we don't need any updates. But at the same time, they want to have access to the data. They see these benefits of a really open system, and also getting high resolution data. So not just the temperature every second, but we want to have 200 signals at 4 kilohertz to be really able to see vibration in a machine. So it's very difficult, because this involves change. It also involves looking at your system different. Maybe you have to lay off some people that are now not necessary anymore, and hire other people like data analysts in your company. So that also requires change. And where it's more easy, and where they're also used to embedded systems, is in aerospace, for instance, also in the medical field. Their PLCs are not being used at all. They always have been looking at embedded solutions. So there, the market is a little bit easier to penetrate. But that also means that there's already embedded competitors in this field. And we just try to bring this embedded way of thinking to industry, because I think there's many benefits to this embedded way.
What do you think are the top three benefits, very clear state, for the industry to use embedded systems?
Yeah, the number one, I would say, high-speed access to data. Everybody wants the data, because everybody's talking about AI. They want to do predictive maintenance. They want to get access to the low-level data of their machines. The problem is, of course, how do you interpret the data? You need to know a lot. Yeah, you have to have a lot of knowledge about how this machine works. So then there again, we have this systems and engineering thinking that you need. The other benefits are, especially if you're developing a new machine, is the incredible speed that you gain with developing this new machine, because you don't have to develop the software. We have ready-made apps that, let's say, cover 90% of whatever you want to do with the machine. And the last 10% we can either add for this customer or the customer can add himself. So this is also really special about how Motor Cortex approaches the market. We don't just give the client the building blocks to build their own software. We can do that. Of course, we can do that. But we also give him a ready-made application, which is suitable for robots, AGVs, and generic machines, or all at the same time. So we maintain one app that can do everything. You have to configure it. That's a way of telling this app what it is or what it is controlling. And then still, if you're missing 10% of this functionality that you need for your specific application, you can still add this later. So this is a huge benefit where we can, let's say a company is developing a new robot arm, we can have him up and running within a day. And he can show this to his clients or future clients. Maybe the hardware is not yet ready. For that, we already have a digital twin that can operate with the same looks. So we just need a CAD model, or the client can convert his own CAD model into a visualization. The software already works like it should. And he can already use this for marketing, for instance. And the hardware is still on order. So usually in our case, the software is done much earlier than the hardware is available. So this is also why it's important that we already saw that in a lot of cases where we did not have access to the hardware, but we wanted to continue software development. So we built in the capability of real-time digital twin into our control system itself. That means that the control system that you're designing for this client, you can already test on a digital version. And this is, of course, one of the main purposes of a digital twin, is that you can experiment much quicker on a virtual hardware without even having this hardware. Building hardware costs time. You need to order things. And when you build it, you discover it doesn't work. I forgot something. And this digital twin is a very fast and efficient way to use it as experiment, test out the behavior of a system, including the control system, without having to build the hardware. And that's also really a strong point of Motor Cortex, that we look at digital twins a little bit different than our competition, where you see a lot of digital twin companies, and basically it's a visualization of a process or a factory, and it's not so much a model of how this thing really works. So our digital twin is not suitable for simulating a complete factory. We are more focused on real-time motion control. So our digital twins have models of electric motors, of encoders, so these are physical models that you can configure to, for instance, mimic the behavior or the misbehavior of an encoder. And if you have this capability, you can actually check your design before you build it using this digital twin. Also, you can tune the control system without having access to the hardware. We've done this with hydraulic actuators, for instance, where we have such a good model of hydraulic actuators that we can tune the control system at home. I can do this on my couch at home and then take this configuration to the client, and there he plugs it in and it already works. So we don't have to tune from scratch. So this saves a lot of time in commissioning systems. It saves a lot of time in designing systems. So I think the main benefit would be that we save our clients so much time in developing software.
Okay. What do you see as the biggest trends in robotics, automation, and machine building for the coming years?
Yeah, so as I see multiple trends. So there's a trend of moving towards embedded. Software becomes more complex, and therefore we have to trust dedicated software companies with developing these parts that are becoming so complex. So this is one trend. The other trend is that we want to have access to more high resolution data, and this should be centralized. And where better to get your data from than from a control system? So you could have a machine and add all kinds of sensors to it and then read this data with other systems. But the control system usually already has this knowledge. So we just need a way to take this out and then store it somewhere until we know what to do with it. So we are not going to develop this AI problem-solving thing on top of this data. This is for other companies, but we want to provide, we're going to enable other companies to be able to access this data. So this access to high-resolution data is another thing. And the other trend is that we, of course, are in our field where we are very close to the hardware, where we have very small timescales like milliseconds. Also there, we are learning skills with using AI methods, or let's call it machine learning methods. It's not really AI, I think. Actually, this was already proposed, let's say 40 years ago, where we kind of use data-driven control system engineering. When I was studying, we called this system identification, this subject. So where you use data to estimate a model of your system. So you there's something's going in and there's something's coming out, and you try to create a predictor of the, how this system behaves. And now we would call this AI. But if you have this model of your system, so you identified a system, you can then use this model to come up with a control law that stabilizes this system or improves the performance of this system. But what is going to be the trend next is that we forget about modeling this system, just try to estimate the best way of controlling this device, unknown device. So this is how we humans learn how to ride a bike or how to walk. We just try, we fall until we don't fall, and then we become better and better. So we have no idea of the physical world, but somehow we are able to control it. So we don't make a model of the world. We skip this step. We just create a controller that works. And this will be a trend, especially for skills. There's a lot of things going on in humanoid robots that function like humans, of course. How they learn how to grasp. So there's companies that build models and also build controllers that can accomplish this task. And later there will be a market for the solutions that these companies have trained. You can buy a hand skill set from one company, and you can buy an arm skill set from another company, and maybe you can combine them into a complete skill set for a humanoid robot. So this will be a trend in selling models or controllers based on AI.
But how do you trust a controller that you don't know how it works?
Yeah, that's an interesting problem. So there's also a lot of discussion going on in the world of safety. So safety is, I would almost say, it's getting out of hand with the rules that you have to apply to for robotics. But it's also really difficult to solve. So let's start at the beginning. For safety, we used to have digital safety. It's either safe or not safe. You have a button that says if it's not pressed, it's safe. If you press it, it's unsafe, so the machine stops. This is like digital safety. Now we become more interactive. So let's say humans and machines get closer to each other. So we get like a sliding scale of how safe something is. If I'm far away, it's safe. If I'm close, it's not so safe because the robot can potentially still reach me. But if I'm really with my hand touching this robot, it's really unsafe. So then it should stop. So this analog version of safety, so it's not on or off anymore. And this means that we also need to do computations before we decide if it's safe or not. And to implement a computation with complex mathematics, you need to get this software certified. And this is really the hard part. It's where you can come up with a great algorithm that checks if this robot is not moving too fast, if it's near you or if it's far away. But to prove that this is safe is a very complex, time-consuming and also expensive task, because you need to involve a third party that checks your work, and every little piece you have to check if you didn't make any mistake. So this makes it really complicated to make cobots really safe. So now companies take the risk. Nobody knows exactly how we should define this safety, this analog safety. So a lot of these standards are still in the making. And per system, it's also up to the engineers to decide if they're going to use this standard or not, or if they come up with something new. And we see this, there is a desire to make also the safety software more and more complex, because we have more complex tasks to accomplish, more sensors to check. So in industry, we currently use safety PLCs. They are based on microcontroller architecture, so they don't have operating systems. They try to minimize the complexity, because all the complexity, you have to prove that it works. So if you keep it as simple as possible, it's easier to prove that it works under all circumstances. But this trend is now going toward that maybe you can do safety on a PC. We recently showed this together with Cisco on the embedded world, where Intel provides a CPU with, they call it Safety Island, and it's certifiable to SIL2 at the moment. And this makes it possible that you can have the CPU power of a normal PC for these complex operations and still prove them that this is really safe according to the standards. And this trend will continue. So we will continue to have the desire to do more complex safety checks. So not only safe kinematics for robot arms, but also for humanoid robots. And there's many cases where we want to interact with a very big, dangerous robot, but we want to make sure that the worker that is involved stays safe. But this will be very, very slow process because it's so hard. Yeah, on average, for every safety function you could count, it takes about 2 years and 2 million euros of investment before you can sell it as a safety feature. So this is not, at the moment, not in our reach, how dearly we want to invest in this, because we find it very interesting and we see that it's necessary. This is only suitable or achievable by the big companies that can actually pay this upfront.
We already discussed about AI, we discussed about safety, we talked about digital twins, embedded software. Anything else you want to talk about?
Yeah, I have an interesting, I think it's interesting. I don't know if you think it's interesting, but this, I also have a background in the simulation business, so flight simulation, driving simulation, but also simulating, like I said, a digital twin is a simulation of a physical thing. And you make the simulation because you want to predict what the outcome will be in different situations without having to build this. And I think this is the essence of human progress. I think when we came down from the tree and we developed a way to simulate outcomes or to predict, if I do this, it will work, and if I do this, it won't work. So this is, you make a simulation in your head.
Yeah, it's intuition.
Yeah, it's not intuitive, but you really reason. And I think this is the moment when we would call ourselves intelligent, because we can really reason. And this is something I think AI at this moment cannot do. So we look at how the world works. We estimate, like Newton did, this first principle law of motion. Once you have this, you can make all kinds of predictions about the world. So you don't have to really build it and try it, but you can predict it much quicker on a piece of paper if it will work or not. And this is going further and further until we now, the kind of the physical development was always very slow relative to the cyber development that we had online, where, for instance, with AI, you could, okay, I want to train an algorithm that can distinguish a rose from a tulip. And because we have been on the internet so long, there's millions, probably billions of pictures of roses and pictures of tulips. So we can teach this algorithm very quickly with a lot of data how to solve this problem. But in the physical world, it's not so easy to do an experiment. In the physical world, you would have to build a machine, try it, doesn't work, build a new machine, try this, build another one. So everything takes time. And because the laws of physics never changed, you cannot accelerate this. So it's always the same time that it takes, unless you can really make a model of this physical world and put it in the cyber world. So there you can experiment much quicker. So you can also multiply this problem as a billion times, because we know how to scale things on the internet. We just rent more servers, run more simulations in parallel, so we can test this behavior. We can train our controller to make this machine walk or redesign a machine that's easy to control. But then we need to hope that it will work on the real physical thing. So this is, I think, where we are headed with this digital twin, NVIDIA Omniverse, other game engines that have a general purpose physics in them. So we can finally make the next step in this evolution where we can experiment in the virtual world and apply this to the physical world. But yeah, I have no idea if we can really reach this level of fidelity that we need in our simulation, because also from our experience, the experience of our customers also, building a robot is really hard. Not only the software is complicated, there is still friction. There is production accuracy in the gears that make strange behavior. There's always EMC problems. No matter what you do, you will face them. So there's so many unpredictable things in reality that I think this goal is still very far away, where we can use the virtual world completely to accelerate design for the physical world.
What should I do if I wanted to know more about Vectionary and Motor Cortex?
Give me a call.
Yeah, connect on LinkedIn or visit the more Vectionary website, right?
Yeah, of course. You can always connect with me and visit us in the beautiful town of Maastricht in the Netherlands, or come and see us at various shows, trade shows, where we often can be found with partners, partner companies that want to show our products. Like on SPS, we did this with Synopticon. They make motor controllers, let's say single axis controls, and we add multi axis on top of this. And for Embedded World, which was last month, was with Cisco, and there we focused more on how can we show motor cortex in combination with a safety system that monitors what we do, and then therefore create some kind of safe robotic system.
Okay, so thank you very much, Philip. Thank you for visiting us, and hope to see you back soon.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
Yeah, it was a pleasure.
Cool.